1 Corinthians chapter 10. You might want to go ahead and mark your place there. We'll be turning there quite a bit throughout this evening's lesson. Many times we admonish young people, older people who are in particular situations, to stand up for what you believe in. Hear that a lot? We tell people to stand up and be counted, stand up and let your opinion be known. And at times there is a great deal of wisdom in that. I would say to you though, there are occasions as well where sometimes the best advice is not stand up. The best advice is run. The reason for that is if you are facing an unwinnable situation, the best thing to do is to get out of that situation. So many times we'll hear even those who instruct on self-defense will say, if at all possible, get out of the situation before you have to take action. There's something biblical about that. In fact, throughout the Bible, what we find oftentimes is where God is using the term flee. Get out. Run away from this situation. As we consider that, I want us to look here at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Because God is showing in this section, talking about the children of Israel, times when they should have fled, times when they should have run that they did not. And it got them into all manner of trouble. If you will, look here with me, beginning in verse 7. He says, "Do not be idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, not grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer." Within this section of Scripture, we have a very succinct history of what the children of Israel did that got them into so much trouble. What I want us to see this evening is that almost every passage in which God uses the term flee, get out, in the New Testament, can be traced back to these ideas. And so using this particular section of Scripture as kind of our home base, what I want us to do this evening is to examine those passages in the New Testament where God says, get out. And I want us to note the wisdom that God gives in that. And the warnings that we should take to avoid falling into the same trap that the children of Israel fell into. If you note very closely here in this section, what we find is the first admonition to flee that we'll look at this evening. Going on over in the text just a bit to verse 14, as Paul draws to his conclusion, he says, "Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry." Many times we begin thinking in our American culture kind of way that we don't have a problem with idolatry. It's very rare for us to see some big statue somewhere that people bow down to. It's a very rare thing as we're driving down the road to see some temple, and we know that within inside that temple are all manner of little figures and little statues that people are paying homage to. That's not to say they don't exist. They do in the United States, but it's not a very common thing. Because of our, quote, Christian heritage, we don't have a lot of that kind of idolatry. However, to say that we do not have a problem with idolatry is a wrong statement. If you consider the definition of what idolatry is all about, simply put, it's someone or something to which one gives blind and or excessive allegiance. In other words, all idolatry is, when we boil right down to the heart of it, is when we are putting something before God. How many times can we trace in Israel's history that they put something before God? In fact, the passage that we looked at to begin with, there in verses 7 through 10, much of that is dealing with idolatry. Well, what is it that we, as 21st century Americans, have in common with these ancient Israelites that would lead us into idolatry? I want us to talk about that just a minute this evening. As we consider some of the things that perhaps would be our modern day idols, I might suggest one that might not come to your mind right away. As I look at the culture that we live in, I believe more and more one of the primary idols that we are putting up in our culture is that of fun. Now, is that anything new? Well, obviously not. Look at our text here. As we look down to verse 7, it says, "They do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." Now, I well understand that much of the appeal of Israelite idolatry was that of the sexual nature. Many of these pagan religions, when it talks about rising up to play, was talking about fulfilling the senses of the flesh. However, to limit it to that would be a mistake. When we talk about idolatry, much of it had to do with getting away from the mundane. They were tired of what was going on in the wilderness. They were tired of what was going on in their own country later on. And they saw these religions with their feast days and with the fun associated with it. And because of that, they went after those idols. Now, let me say at the very beginning, I'm not against fun. Now, there was a quote one time that said a Puritan's greatest nightmare was that somewhere somebody was having a good time. I don't think that's right. However, what do we have to realize? We have to realize that fun becomes idolatrous when it becomes excessive. When we see it as replacing the desire for godliness. When we look at fun becoming an idol, what that means is that it is robbing us of the mindset needed for godliness. As we look in the New Testament, no less than 10 times, God says, "Be sober." He's not using that necessarily in the terms of alcoholism. He's using that in the terms of give serious attention toward. Let me give you just one passage where we find that to illustrate our point. As we look in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 6 through 8, he says, "So then, let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of faith and love and the helmet of salvation." Numerous passages we find that make that same plea. The idea is, yes, there are occasions for fun. Yes, there are occasions to take your mind off of things, to have a diversion. But God says, the majority of the time, make sure that you are paying attention to what's going on in the world around you. Make sure you're paying attention to the seriousness of being a Christian. So how do we know if fun has become an idol in our lives? How do we know if fun has taken the place of godliness? Well, I think we have to give ourselves a test. We have to look at what we consider important. And if all of my energies and all of my attention, or a very good deal of my attention, is focused on my next vacation, my next getaway, my next day off, then I've got to examine where my priorities are. In fact, I would say to us, if I'm more willing to drive across the country to an amusement park than to drive across the county for a gospel meeting, I may be approaching that state of idolatry. I may be at a point in my life where I am placing the quest for fun, the quest for diversion, the quest for something to take my mind off reality, and not being the kind of godly person that I need to be. The Israelites had a problem with that. And if we're not careful, we can allow that to be a problem for us as well. Now let me move to one that I think is even a little more prevalent than that. We understand that in our culture, money plays a very big role. We are a consumer nation. You watch 5 minutes of television and about 3 minutes of that will be commercials. And what those commercials are seeking to do is to convince you to give your money to someone in return for something. Therefore, we need the money in the first place, don't we? God says we have to be very careful that we don't allow that to become our idol. Look with me over to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Again, put your marker here. We'll be back. 1 Timothy chapter 6, though, I want you to look down with me to verse 11. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 11. Here we have another flee passage. Get away from passage. And so we look here, and Paul says to Timothy, "But as for you, O man of God, flee these things. Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness." Now, in order to understand what these things are, we have to back up a little bit, don't we? We've got to get the context of the passage. So let's go back to verse 6. Paul says, "Now there is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content." But look at verse 9. "Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs." Now let's put our verse with that. "But as for you, O man of God, flee these things." Now that makes a little more sense, doesn't it? Paul says to Timothy, as you consider in your life things that you view as important, as you look at your life, if your pursuit is after worldly wealth, you have missed what this world is all about, what we're to be doing. He says if you are pursuing these things as your primary goal, then you are missing out on the godliness that God desires for you to have. Now let me say this. Is there anything wrong with being wealthy? Is there anything wrong with having money? And that's one of those questions where we have to pause for a minute and realize there's two very distinct answers for that. No, if that wealth is viewed as a gift from God. If God has blessed me and I have done well in my job and I've prospered in my job and I've been able to accumulate, is there anything wrong with that? No, as long as I view it as a gift from God. And as long as I'm using it in a very healthy way in His service. So when does wealth become an idol? When does that occur? If we pursue wealth, is what Paul is saying to Timothy. If that becomes your life's desire, how much more you can make, how much more you can add to your bank account, how much bigger a house you can have, how much better a car you can have, and that becomes my life, I have an idol. And just like the Israelites who bowed down to Baal, just like when they bowed down to Asherah and all of these other gods, what I am doing is saying this is very important to me to the point that I am putting it above my service to God. And if I find that to be the case in my life, if I am more concerned about satisfying my own comforts than in pleasing God, it's time to destroy some idols. We flee from those things. Isn't it interesting that the Apostle Paul uses this action verb? He says, Timothy, if you find yourself pursuing wealth, flee from it. Why? He sees the danger. How do we know he sees the danger? Because he realizes what it's done to others. And so really, if we wanted to sum up our modern day idols, we can say it's fun and games, and we can say it's the pursuit of wealth, but really, if we want to boil it all down to one point, I think perhaps the biggest danger we face in the United States today with idolatry is making ourselves idols, in which we're saying any and everything that I want, anything I desire, anything that makes me happy, that's what I am going for. That is my quest in life. Again, nothing new. Look again at some of what Paul says, going over to 2 Timothy this time. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 3 And listen to what he says about those who are coming, the godless things that will occur. He says, but understand this, verse 1, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty. Why? Verse 2, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with deceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Listen to what Paul says there and look at the brackets that he puts. What's the first thing? Lovers of self. And as we look down to verse 5, what's the second bracket? Lovers of pleasure. When my ways become my primary concern, when I am more interested in being comfortable than in being godly, when I am more interested in pursuing my own ways than the ways of God, what I have done is allowed an idol to creep up in my life. And what does Paul say to do? Flee from idolatry. Get away from those things because they'll destroy us. Let's consider a second point with this. As we consider another kind of idolatry, let's return once again over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. What was leading the people to be idolatrous? Well, we said, first of all, it was their pursuit of themselves. And that's what we saw there in verse 7. Let's look down to verse 8 now. As Paul gives this warning, he says, we must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. Now, he's referring back to a time in Israel's history where they pursued this idolatrous practice that brought them into pagan prostitution. And God was so fed up with that attitude that he struck 23,000 of them down in one day. The sexual immorality associated with that caused them to die. It's really no surprise then when we back up to chapter 6 and verse 18 what Paul has to say about sexual immorality. Notice what he says. Looking at chapter 6 verse 18 as he's making a point to them about this, he says, flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own. For you were bought with a price, so glorify God in your body. Paul says, when it comes to sexual immorality, flee from it. Run away from it. And he makes the point, he says, in some ways, this is a different kind of sin in the fact that you are using the vessel that God has given you to do work in His service in a way that is ungodly, in a way that defies what God has said for you to do. And because of that, he tells the Corinthians, you had better run as hard as you can away from that. We've got to understand that flirting with sexual temptation is an unwinnable situation. How many people have said, I'm going to get just as close as I can. I'm not going to lose my virginity. But I am going to get as close as I can, only to find themselves falling into this temptation. Only finding themselves not fleeing from it, not getting away from it, but finding themselves to have fallen into such a practice. This is very well illustrated for us in the book of Proverbs. If you will, look with me back to Proverbs chapter 7. Back a few months ago, when we were at Pepper Road, I was asked to teach a class on the book of Proverbs. And I think it was the first time ever I'd had 3 months teaching in just this one book. A lot of times when you study Proverbs, you kind of throw it in with all the books of poetry and you don't get a whole lot of it. And so in setting up, I had said, okay, the first 8 chapters, we're going to take chapter by chapter. I was absolutely amazed at how much of the first eight chapters talks about fleeing fornication, fleeing sexual immorality. And the very interesting thing about it is the first part of this book is set up like a father talking to his child, talking to his son. And then it started making a little more sense. He saw this as a danger. And so over and over and over, he's telling his son, stay away from these kinds of things. As we come to chapter 7, we find here that the father is speaking of a situation with which he was familiar. Here was a young man who was kind of playing around with this, was getting as close to sin as he could. Look down in verse 6 with me, and we'll start this off. He says, "For at the window of my house I have looked out through my lattice, and I have seen among the simple, I perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense, passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness." This particular facet of sexual immorality is dealing with a young man who is soliciting a prostitute. And I want you to note here what the writer tells us about that. Where was the young man? He was near her corner. He was on her street. What time of day was it? It was evening, as it was getting dark. Was he in the wrong place at the wrong time? Absolutely. Was that of his choosing? He didn't take just a wrong turn here. He didn't find himself in this situation, but he accidentally found himself here where she was. And because of that, because he was flirting with getting as close as he could with this, he found himself in a very bad situation. If you look at verse 10, because he did not flee from sexual immorality, verse 10 says, "Behold, the woman meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart." And the next few verses go on to describe how she says, "I've been looking for you. I've been waiting on you," flooding him with all of these compliments, all of these good things, talking about how wonderful their experience is going to be. He did not flee sexual immorality. He finds himself getting very much baited to be caught in the trap. And because he stayed and because he listened, go down with me to verse 21 to the end result. It says, "With much seductive speech she persuades him. With her smooth talk she compels him. All at once he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter or as a stag caught fast. Till an arrow pierces its liver, as a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life." As Solomon writes these words, he talks about the seriousness of what's going on. Because he went to the wrong place, and because he stayed in the wrong place, and because he listened to that seductive talk, what he found was that he was on the road to destruction. And then the writer, the father, takes the time to talk to his own son about that. And he says in verse 24, "And now, O sons, listen to me and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For many a victim has she laid low, and all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death." Solomon doesn't mince words here. And while he's talking about the idea of prostitution, the example that he's using expands throughout the book to being in a situation where you are surrendering your sexual purity and the danger that that's going to bring to your life spiritually. So as we consider those things, how is it that we flee from sexual immorality? When Paul says to us in no uncertain terms, get away from the situation, how exactly do we do that? And I understand that this is stuff of a whole nother sermon. But let me talk to you just about a couple of things. First of all, for those of you who are younger, avoid getting too serious too soon. So many times, I'm afraid we see young people kind of like we talked about this morning, with their quest to fit in, with their quest to be accepted among their peers, have to have a boyfriend, have to have a girlfriend. And we're not talking about just the cute little boyfriend, girlfriend where you're calling each other on the phone every once in a while. We're talking about serious stuff. And before too long, because this very young couple has gotten themselves in this grown-up situation, they begin thinking they can do what grown-up married folks can do. And before too long, the purity with which God has blessed every one of us is lost. I know I'm a very old-fashioned kind of guy, but we're not talking about something traditional here. We're talking about something that will rob you of your eternal life with God. Be very serious about that. Don't feel like, because everyone else around you has a boyfriend, everyone else around you has a girlfriend, and they're kind of poking fun at you because you don't. Don't ever feel that you've got to surrender to that kind of pressure. Be careful. Flee from sexual immorality. Secondly, don't place yourself in tempting situations. You see, that's what the children of Israel did. They very willingly would go over to the camp of the Moabites. They would meet down at the temple of Baal. And I just wonder if perhaps there were a few of those Israelites who said, well, it's not going to happen to me. I'm going to go and I'm going to enjoy the fun and we're going to have a big feast and we're going to eat really well. But I'm not going to surrender to only find themselves giving in, losing that purity. Let me tell you, the back seat of a car, an unchaperoned house, is no place where you're going to make the decision to stay pure. If you think that if you allow yourself to get in that situation and all of a sudden you're going to be hit with a burst of spiritual strength and you're not going to give in, you are deceiving yourselves, and that's exactly what the devil wants you to do. Stay away from those situations. Stay away from those places where it's going to be very easy to give in to what you need to be fleeing from. Don't get cozy with the enemy. And thirdly, and this one really should go without saying, but I think this is what gets us into trouble most of the time. Don't date those who don't share your conviction. I know that there is something that's viewed kind of exciting about going out with somebody who has a bad reputation. I have noticed that from time to time, and at this especially, and I'm not trying to be sexist here in this remark, but a lot of times it seems that there are young girls who have been very good girls, good reputations, who for some reason are attracted to the bad boys. And I'm afraid sometimes they'll say, oh, I can handle it. Even though I know this person doesn't share my convictions, even though I know this person will not have any problem with surrendering, I can handle it, only to find that it can't be handled in that situation. You see, when we're told to flee from something, it means get away. If there's a dog standing there and somebody says, get away, it's dangerous, you don't say, oh, I don't think so. Let me just rub him behind his ears here. Let me just pet him a little bit. You know what will happen. The same thing is the case with sin. If we think we can toy around with sin, if we think we can play with these ideas where Paul is saying, get away from them, then the devil has got us right where he wants us to be. When the temptation comes, get away. I imagine some of you ladies who are a little bit older in here, during your dating years, your mother gave you a dime, didn't she? Remember what that dime was for? I'm talking to a generation who doesn't know that. It used to be this thing called a payphone. And you'd pull your horse and buggy in, you know, and put the phone in, the dime in. And a mother would tell her daughter, if you're in a bad situation, call me. Why? Because that mother would drive the ends of the earth to get her daughter out of a bad situation. Young men and young ladies both. your parents still want to take that role with you. There is nothing wrong when you find yourself in an unwinnable situation to call home and say, "Mom, come get me." Whatever it takes, don't fall to these temptations. Let's look at one other of the fleeing passages. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And as we move on down, we've seen the warning, don't get involved in their fun and games. And then the warning, don't get involved in sexual immorality. And then we come down to verse 9, where Paul says, we must not put Christ to the test, as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble, as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, with that in mind, let's look over to 2 Timothy one more time, to chapter 2 this time. 2 Timothy chapter 2, and I'm using a phrase Paul used earlier, just kind of summarizing these things for this, but look at the actual words that he spoke here. In verse 22, he says, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels. Many times when we read the word passion, we immediately assume what we were just talking about. We've talked about passion so much in the sense of love and that kind of thing, that perhaps we miss the point of what Paul is talking about here. I don't think this is another warning to avoid sexual immorality. Because if you look at what he tells him to pursue instead of these things, he says pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, etc. But then look at verse 23. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels. As Paul talks one more time about fleeing from these things, what he's saying is, get away from the temptation to be argumentative and dissatisfied. Was that a problem with the Israelites? Here in the auditorium, we've been going through their history. And God, in very concise terms, puts all of that together. And how many times do we see them grumbling against Moses, against Aaron, against God? We want to go back to Egypt. We don't have enough to eat. We don't have enough to drink. So Paul says, don't be that kind of person. Flee from this kind of thing. Flee from those youthful temptations to be dissatisfied. And I think there is some of that in our youth. I believe when we are young, many times we think we know better than everyone else. And if somebody stands here this evening and says, that wasn't me, I want to talk to you a little bit. Because most everyone, when they hit 16, 17, 18, 19 years of age, we know better. We all have that common heritage if we've been through that age. We know better than those in authority. And so what we do is we kind of grumble and we kind of complain and we argue. And Paul says to Timothy, flee from those things. I don't know how old Timothy was here. No idea. But whatever age he was young enough where Paul says, you are in danger. Get away. Many times, we don't flee from those things. And as we get older, we get worse. We allow ourselves to go to a point where we are saying, not only was I that way when I was a youth, I'm still that way in middle age. I'm still that way as I've gotten older. We have to be very careful about that. Because sometimes, like we read there in 1 Corinthians 10, that leads us to grumble against the plan of God. Our dissatisfaction with what God has said to do. We don't like how strict God is. We don't like the fact that God has said certain things are off limits. We don't like the fact that God has said there are certain things that we need to do. And so whether it's overtly or whether it's in our heart, we begin grumbling and complaining and saying, I just can't believe God would call on me to do something like that. What was the point Paul was making with the Israelites? Don't do it. Because look at them and look at where it got them. And sometimes we may grumble about those who carry out the plans of God. We just simply don't like what those elders are telling us. We don't like the stands that they've taken. We don't like the plans that they've made for us. And so we grumble and we bicker and we complain. And there may even be occasions where there's things that do need to be changed. But yet, rather than pursuing that in a very positive, very godly way, what we're doing is we're grumbling about how bad things are to the point that nobody listens to our suggestions. Paul says, get away from these. Flee from them. Don't be the kind of person who can be characterized like an Israelite. And so I ask, do I have a grumbling spirit? Well, am I never happy about how things are done? Nobody can please me. Or do I always believe I've got the best way? And when people don't listen to me, they've missed out on a whole lot. Is it the fact that I am unable to disagree without a fight? Somebody's doing something I don't particularly care for, but I can't discuss it with them because within 2 minutes, my voice is up, my face is turned red, and I'm just arguing with them about it. Well, if so, I've got a grumbling spirit. And Paul says, flee from that. Get away from those kinds of things because they'll destroy you. So he says, flee from idolatry. And he says, flee from sexual immorality. And he says, flee from these youthful passions. Let's go back one more time to 1 Corinthians 10. Why has all of this been told to us? Why did he go through this history of Israel one more time? Verse 11. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction on whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed, lest he fall. Paul says, the reason I'm going through this is because you need to learn. You need to look at those who have experienced these things and learn from their mistakes. I imagine this evening that in our audience, there are those who have fallen to all three of these fleeing temptations that we've talked about. Idolatry, sexual immorality, youthful passions. And I imagine that in this assembly, there are not only those who have fallen from them, but they've realized where they ought to be and they have come to the Lord as they should. And I can guarantee you that any who have fallen to these would advise, listen to me on this. Let me tell you what idolatry will do to you. Let me tell you what sexual immorality will do to you. Let me tell you what youthful passions will do to you. Why? They've got a story to tell. Because they can see where they were and where they needed to be, and they made it right. And Paul says, let me tell you something. The reason I'm going over this is because these people fell to that, but they didn't come back. But then note verse 13. No temptation has overcome you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and He will not let you to be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation He will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. You see, if you're being thrown the temptation of idolatry or the sin of sexual immorality, or the sin of youthful passion, God says, I'll provide you a way of escape from that. And after tonight's lesson, I sure hope we know what one of those is. I've given you 2 feet. Get out. And then verse 14, therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Because you see, all of these things can be wrapped up in that verse. Whether it's the idol of fun or wealth or me, or the idol of satisfying sexual urges, or the idol of pursuing my youthful passions, God says, I've given you a way to escape, now flee from it. get outs. Which brings us to the question, are we ready to do that? I hope the answer is yes. Because I believe what we've talked about this evening, we have covered 100% of the audience. While not all three may apply to you, I can almost guarantee that at least one of the three does. It may not be the same for everybody, but this covers a very broad range. Whatever the case, God says, are you ready? You ready to get out of these things? I've provided the way of escape for you. And the way of escape is, first of all, get out of the situation and to make your life right with me. This evening, do you find yourself in this situation? Do you find yourself where you have crushed godliness, where you have allowed your own pursuits, your own pleasures, your own desires to become your idol? Have you fallen to sexual temptation? Have you allowed youthful passions to grow maybe into middle age passions and old age passions? To the point that you're argumentative about everything? Has it destroyed not only your relationship with God, but your credibility with others? Flee from those things. God has said, even though you've gone down those paths, you're welcome back. You can come home to me. And maybe this evening it just simply means finally coming to grips in your life and saying, I'm ready to surrender to God. I'm ready to put myself behind. I'm ready to follow Him. That means coming and confessing your belief in Jesus Christ. Seeking forgiveness of those sins through the waters of baptism, raised up to walk with Him. Or maybe your sins are well known. Or maybe you just need the prayers of strength from the congregation and you would like for us to pray on your behalf. We'll do that this evening. Whatever it takes, flee from these things. If you need to respond to the Lord's message this evening, won't you come as we stand and sing together?